Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from roughly 12 to roughly 12:45 from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joined, as usual, with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing, Stas?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Got Dave in the booth. What's up, Dave?
What up? Quick shout out to Angela Garbitz of Goldenrod Pastries in Lincoln, Nebraska, who was on the network last week and brought me some great cookies and is a big fan of Cooking Issues.
Whoa, she doesn't come and say hello?
Well, that was last week. She's back in Lincoln, Nebraska, I assume.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, Angela was one of the interns, one of the tech interns at the French Culinary Institute back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Like the hard, you know, the hardcore good crew. You know what I mean? Like, that was a good crew we had back then.
Oh, gee.
So if you're anywhere, so I don't think Martha Stewart has stopped by her bakery for a pastry, but I know for a fact Martha Stewart once landed her private jet to pick up a sandwich. So if any of you have a private jet and you are flying over the great state of Nebraska, remember, the entire state is a runway. So all you got to do is choose like a convenient spot somewhere near Angela's place, land, and get some pastries, right? Wouldn't you think it's a good idea, Dave?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Good idea. Oh, by the way, call in your questions to 718-497-2128.
Speaking of pastries.
718-497-2128. What?
Your cake.
Oh, we'll talk about that later. So, Dave, are the mics like super loud today? Because my ears feel like I'm blasting
my... Are you
my...
sick?
Well, you sound really sick, so yeah. I turned it up a little bit. Sick?
Okay, so I was at the Dead Rabbit yesterday, and it was so loud because the Dead Rabbit was having their yearly, like, you know, new menu anniversary party thing, and they're releasing a whiskey, the Dead Rabbit. Dead Rabbit's a very famous bar here in New York, for those of you that don't know famous bars. And I was there with some of our, you know, upcoming bar team. I was there with Don and with Jack. And by the way, Nick Bennett and Jack Schramm, two former bartenders from Booker and Dax. Nick Bennett is, of course, has his own program, Porch Light, and Jack's doing a guest shift there. So if you want to see two former BDX bartenders, head bartenders, behind the stick at the same time, go there tonight between 7 and like 9 or until Jack decides to go. So anyway, so I'm at Dead Rabbit, and it's so loud I start screaming. And I was like, I know tomorrow morning it's going to sound like I took up like a 12-pack-a-day habit.
Mm-hmm. And it does.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about it is that there's certain songs that...
It's going to be really good for your singing career, yeah.
Right. I mean, like, there's certain songs that, like, even people, like, take a... this morning I was singing, you know the song Across 110th Street?
By who?
Bobby Womack.
Hmm.
Across 110th Street.
Oh, yeah.
That song? Yeah. Anyway, so like, anyway, so the thing is like, I'm like, oh man, I got the, I can do that now. You know what I mean?
Why?
Because I was like, oh yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, you gotta
get it to the core.
You gotta let him say that.
We can't afford that.
Oh.
We can afford 5 seconds.
That's a myth, actually.
Dude.
Really?
Yeah.
Bobby Womack is not listening. Do you think his lawyers are listening? He is definitely
Somebody's
not.
Somebody's always listening.
It's like the big brother of... You know what? It's like...
God. Why do you like that song?
It's a great song. It's a great song.
Womack and Womack. Can't beat them.
And I'll tell you something else. It was featured in a movie.
Which one?
I think it wasn't...
Across 110th Street.
Across 110th Street. It was like the theme song. And that brought into my mind... Because on the way to the Dead Rabbit, I was listening to one of the all-time great movie soundtracks, Superfly, you know, Curtis Mayfield. And so, like, it was perfect, like, on the way back with the raspy voice. And in the morning, I was like, I could just continue my kind of, like, 70s blaxploitation film track thing. And it was like, it was good. It felt good. It's a good reason to have
what
your voice.
What is that 110th Street? Or what is
it? It is a street.
I know, but why is it so...
Well, you know, there's a couple of, you know, back in the 70s.
Is that where Central Park is?
It is where Central Park ends. Yeah. I mean, look, that neighborhood is, I mean, nothing like it was back in the, anyway, whatever. That's neither here nor there. But remember a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about how it's so sad that soundtracks now are, you know, that no one does these awesome either theme songs or soundtracks. And then Kendrick Lamar and crew puts out the Black Panther album. I cannot wait for that movie. You, Dave? You excited to see that?
Yeah, sure. I don't really dig superhero movies that much, but that one was cool.
You know what, man?
What? There's like...
Do you live in Brooklyn? Is this a Brooklyn thing? Like Killjoy? Like Brooklyn Killjoy? No, I don't like superhero
What are you
movies.
Accusing me of, like, being an aloof hipster or something?
I mean, if the shoe fits...
I don't
fits.
Have kids. I don't care about Marvel
Ooh.
Superheroes.
Ooh. Doesn't like kids.
Doesn't like kids either.
I said I don't have kids.
All right.
I don't like them either.
Do you ever see Nacho Libre?
No, actually.
Oh, my God. How do I work? People, how do I work like this? How do I work with this? There's a character that we named a drink after at Booker and Dax called Esqueleto, who's like this like super skinny guy. And one of his lines is he hates all of the orphans in the whole world. All of them. All of them. Anyway.
Yeah, that's fair.
Wow. Damn.
No, I got nothing against orphans. They're probably better behaved.
Ooh. Whoa. Ooh. Wow.
I see where you're going with that.
Man, you guys are speaking of babies. So, Nastasia, you enjoyed it. I put the tweet up yesterday about the king cake with all the babies. And man, like a lot of millennials can take a joke.
Yeah.
But then, like, so many people get all bent out like a pretzel.
What did they say? What was the worst thing?
I don't know. First of all, okay, so what I did was I baked a king cake, completely traditional, by the way, completely traditional king cake, because today is Fat Tuesday, right? So, you know, I did the whole thing with all three colors of sugar, that garish-looking, like, you know, purple, green, and yellow, you know, sugar on top of the glaze, all this other stuff. It's basically, look, the king cake, if you've never had it before, it's basically like, you know, a mildly enriched dough, almost a little bit hotter than a cinnamon bun. Anyway, you do it, and then you roll up, like, pecans and raisins and brown sugar and crap, much like a cinnamon, and you form it into a ring, and then after you bake it, you shove a plastic baby Jesus into the bottom of the cake, and then you slice the cake up.
Because Christianity.
And then you slice the cake up. Well, you know what the thing is that, like, you know, everyone thinks of this is as a... you know, like a New Orleans thing, but, you know, I remember in Spain getting, you know, cakes with those little tokens. Anyway, whatever, doesn't matter. So, like, you bake the cake, and then whoever gets the baby, they have to get the cake next year. You see what I mean? So it's not actually a positive thing. But the funny thing was, is that almost no one who was all bent out of shape about me making fun of everyone being a winner, they're like, most people confuse, like, our generation with baby boomers. I need to tell millennials that there is a whole group of people, us forgotten. What am I, Nastasi? What's my generation?
X. What are you, X?
X?
Yeah,
we're not the baby boomers. Like, we wish we could have destroyed the environment. We wish we could have thrown you guys into debt. But, you know, just we never had the power to do it. You know what I mean? We're losers that way. But, like, they didn't get the joke that...
You were just slackers. You didn't do anything about it.
Yeah, fair. Fair. You know, self-aware slackers, I think, is what, you know.
Oh, because millennials are paying for baby boomers' awful decisions.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. But again, sorry, but, you know, not my call. But they, you know, I wish. Anyway, but the thing is that, like, very few people got the full side of the joke, which is, yeah, they all get the baby, so they all have to provide a king cake next year, so it's, like, double hosed. Anyway, whatever.
But they're not going to do it.
No, of course not. No, please. First of all, who the hell gets a king cake and actually...
eats it?
Oh, that's delicious. You don't like that?
I don't know. It just seems like one of those things where it's all about the ceremony and the spectacle rather than actually eating it.
That's incorrect. It is delicious. All right. But you're thinking about it wrong. It shouldn't be called, like, a king cake. It should be called, like, a king coffee pastry. Like what you really want to do is have a slice of that... You know, when it's relatively fresh, after it's gone stale, you know, garbage. But, like, it's relatively fresh with a cup of coffee. I mean, you like a coffee pastry, do you not, Dave?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, all right.
I'm sure Angela makes some coffee pastries, right, Angela?
She'll have to call
Do you have the address of the studio, Angela? Can we provide that for you, Angela?
Coffeepastries.com. All right, so let me see. Let me call up the questions in the meantime. Because today, Nastasia, I'm on the freaking train.
Yeah.
And they just decide to skip my stop.
I know, it's not a good
It's not a good look on a subway station.
Right? But you would have been late anyway, so. let's not fool ourselves.
You know,
that is true.
You know, it's like, I get no love anywhere. No love. Anyway, okay, here's the questions. This is from Brandon Johnson in Charlotte. Has a highball question. Do you like highballs, Nastasia?
No.
What?
I don't really like cocktails.
What?
I know.
You don't like cocktails?
Doesn't like cocktails. Doesn't like biscuits. Let's just get it all. Doesn't like biscuits. Doesn't like, you know, lemongrass. Doesn't like fungus. Doesn't like...
Wait, you don't like mushrooms?
Job, she likes mushrooms. She doesn't like fungus growing on things. She hates, like, fungally-induced leaf abnormalities.
Like foot infections?
Oh my God.
Well, you have to take it to foot infections.
Do you, Dave?
No, not a fan.
Nobody likes a foot infection. Although
that's why I don't shower at the gym. I go home and do it.
Although, interesting, I saw that. I just don't go to the gym. Boom! So the interesting thing about infections, though, is that we've mentioned this on the show before, but it bears repeating one more time, that the... So salt-risen bread, and we've talked about it before on the show millions of times. Salt-risen bread is an interesting bread because salt is actually not the rising agent. The rising agent is the pathogen, the bacterial pathogen, Clostridium perfringens. Right? I think it's perfringens. And so the classic study was printed right after World War I where they took the bacteria directly off of a gangrene sufferer who had, you know, received gangrene from a wound that they had in the trenches of World War I, and dude baked bread with it.
Oh my God.
And ate it. How about that? Jesus. That's some hardcore business.
Well, I guess I don't have to eat the rest of the day.
Hey man, that person took it for you. I like salt risen bread. I think it's quite good.
Real quick, somebody in the chat room sent a tweet that somebody directed at you in response to your millennial cake photo.
Geez,
here it reads, "Dear Dave, we're sorry you're old. Well, not really. Instead of being bitter, exercise or something. Regards, millennials." Signed on behalf of the entire generation, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, like, first of all... First of all, not at all bitter about it. Like, I'm super psyched to be part of my generation. You know what I mean? I'm not super psyched with all the life choices I've made. Some of them, really good. You know what I mean? But, like, other ones, not so good. But, yeah, no. I mean, I hope everyone I hope everyone's happy with every age they are in life. You know what I mean? Like, I had some really bad ages, like, junior high, like, really kind of blew chunks. Yeah. But I've been super stoked with every age. So, like, you know, there's nothing I'd rather not be right now. Nothing I'd rather not be. There's nothing I'd rather be less right now than, like, 22 again. You know what I mean?
Well, like, it always strikes me as odd when people say, like, oh, college is the best time of your life. I mean, if that's true, then shouldn't you just kill yourself after college? If it's not going to get any better, what's the point in continuing?
Right. But you know what the other thing is? It's not a food issue, so we shouldn't get into it. But, like, you know,
life issues.
After the election, this is the one where I was completely dead wrong, right? So, like, after the election, I was like, you know, I was blaming the millennials wrongly, as it turns out, right? So I was like, the millennials didn't come out and vote. And that's kind of like, you know, and now they're all pissed about it. But when I actually look at the statistics, the percentage of people from each age group, when I was that age, I also didn't vote, me as a group. You know what I mean? So it's like, everyone wants to blame the generation that came before, the generation that came after. It's just, you know, everyone...
It is true you should exercise, too.
Look, you know...
And it is true the baby boomers wrecked the economy and the environment, but yeah.
Gotta read this book, Dave, called The Unnatural History of the Sea. I don't know whether the scholarship is still good, but the author's point was well taken, which is everyone thinks that what's happening, which is, you know, can be true, right? I mean, like, we could destroy the Earth, but everything that's happening, like, hasn't ever happened before, is unprecedented, and then goes on and like, highlights all of the, like, basically, as soon as humans have the ability to do something terrible, they do it. So there's no point in blaming any specific, like, group of people, like baby boomers, right? Like, as soon as we had the shipping capability and the fishing capability, we wiped out as much of the ocean as we possibly could. And it's generation by generation. As soon as you have the capability to do it, you do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sounds like a baby boomer cop-out, but...
Again, wrong generation, brother. My parents were the baby boomers.
No, I don't mean from you. I'm just saying, like, that guy, whoever that is, making the argument.
I don't know how old he is. I don't know.
I would wager that he's a boomer.
All right. You know, maybe we'll find
this is a weird episode.
Anyway, so back to where the cocktails. By the way, Dead Rabbit.
Yeah, highballs.
Dead Rabbit has a Spinzol, and so they're going to be using the Spinzol they said on the menu. And I was like, if you have a problem, you know, you got to get in touch with me. And they said, oh, we will. We will. Okay.
Do they need any Searsols? I know where to get them.
No,
oh,
do you?
Jeez.
Because we don't.
Oh, I thought Amazon, right?
No.
Oh, man. Dave, why, man? Why?
Digging.
They went off again.
You know, it's
let me
like,
check it right now.
It's like freaking.
It's ridiculous.
Speaking of, did you check the walk-in? Is there a ham in the walk-in for us to talk
there
about?
There are several fridges here, so no, I did not get a chance to check them.
All right. Brandon Johnson writes in about highballs. I was recently at a restaurant, ordered a Toki highball. So this is like a Japanese whiskey highball. They had a special tap machine / hookup from Suntory that dispensed the cocktail. The results were extra fizzy with a ton of bubbles. First of all, exercise does not make me feel good. Exercise makes me feel like garbage.
I want you to do this class with me.
Oh, please. Nastasia goes to
wait,
an
what
anger
kind of class?
Anger.
No, it's not. It's like...
Primal scream therapy?
Kind of, with exercise.
I have enough anger. Okay? All right.
This will help
it.
You get it out, yeah.
Yeah.
Right now it's building up inside of you with a toxin.
Please, please, please.
Oh, wait,
please,
I shouldn't have used
please,
the T word.
Please, please, please. Do you know...
I said toxin.
Do you
like,
know,
like some goop thing.
No. Do you know...
yeah.
Like, do you, if you wanted to lower the water table of my anger, do you know how much you'd have to tap?
Yeah, that's why you should try it and
whatever.
See if it's tapped
okay.
It.
Yeah, hit the tap.
Back to the highball. The results were extra fizzy with a ton of bubbles. And you know what? Oh, we started, man. It's like, you know, whatever. Like,
just get on the question,
you
Dave.
Know, people like all the exercise, all these gym freaks, right? And then they're going 2 miles an hour up every stairway in the freaking subway.
You're generalizing.
How do you know it's the same people?
I know. Are you
it's not all
them out of the
it's
gym?
Not all the same people. It's some of the same people. Or the people walking half a mile an hour with their freaking yoga mat in the freaking city, hitting me in the face with their freaking yoga mat.
So real quick, there was this great joke on Seth Meyers around the holidays where he said like, "Oh no, it's that time of the year where tourists come from all over the world to look at all these things like the middle of the sidewalk and the top of the stairs."
It's totally true. Yeah. It's totally true. I love it when people stop at the top of the stairs and look around. Don't you love that, Dave?
Yeah, it's the best.
Then you should do it in front of them.
No, the world is not about... The world is not a tit-for-tat situation.
Sometimes it feels good.
Just do what's right.
Sometimes it feels good.
Just do what's right. Okay, so we have an extra fizzy highball here that Brandon was dealing with. And he said, what is the highball machine doing to give all that extra fizz? Is it mixing whiskey and soda as it's dispensed like a fountain drink? All right. I got to be honest with you. I don't know, but I doubt it, and here's why. I took a look at the tap. I saw a picture of it, and the tap looks like a dedicated tap. So what they're probably doing is carbonating the mixture and getting it super cold. The key to super carbonation, first of all, they probably do relatively low alcohol. So the lower the alcohol percentage, the easier it is to get ripping, ripping bubbles. Now, there are people on the internet who are reviewing this phenomenon of the highball on tap who are, they're clearly lying, because they said something absurd, like it has 4 times or 5 times the carbonation of soda and 1.5 times the carbonation of champagne. But if you do the math, what that's saying is that, that champagne has over 2.5 or 3 times the carbonation of soda, which is not the case, right? Like in terms of actual grams of CO2 per liter of beverage. So the math doesn't even add up on its own page, right? So don't believe the hype that they write on the internet. But what the truth is that the higher the alcohol, the more CO2 you need to get into it for a certain level of bubbles. Also, the more it's going to foam up, because the more alcohol is in it, the lower the higher the viscosity and the lower the surface tension. So what happens is you have this phenomenon of foam. So in order to get a very high kind of bubble amount, you need to get the temperature as low as possible. So what they're probably doing is mixing, carbonating under high pressure, and then cooling it to almost a point where you're going to get crystals. As soon as you get ice crystals in your drink, they form nucleation sites, and you get massive amounts of bubbling. Right? So that's the first step that they're probably doing. They're probably chilling it to a very accurate temperature. They're probably doing a relatively low percentage of alcohol. If I had to guess, if you wanted really ripping carbonation, I would guess somewhere between 11 and 12, no more than 13% alcohol on it. Maybe they do less. I don't know. I haven't tasted their mix. Then the trick is dispensing it. So where most people go wrong with tap carbonated cocktails is they use a relatively crappy tap. For instance, like a beer tap is meant to allow a certain amount of foam, and beer taps are relatively bad at compensating between the very high pressure that you're carbonating at, right, which is much higher than beer, much higher than beer, and the relatively low pressure of atmosphere. Also, if the lines are still for a long time and there's any leak or anything at all, I mean, it happens no matter what, you get little bubbles in the line, and as soon as you open the tap, as the drop in pressure propagates backwards in the line, you start getting foaming in the line. So as it comes out of the tap, it's already starting to foam. It hits the atmosphere, it foams even more. So to kind of stop that, what you want is a very long, cold, laminar flow of stuff. It's not going to create a lot of turbulence as it comes out. A very good compensator valve that lets the stuff stream out nicely, so you're not throwing the bubbles everywhere. The gun taps that mix right at the thing, like a soda machine does, they put the syrup and the carbonated water through very fine nozzles and then mix them in a larger nozzle. It's incredibly turbulent and causes a lot of bubbles. That's why when you hit a soda fountain machine, you see that like Niagara Falls, like foamy look that comes out of that like thick nozzle. And that right there, in a carbonated, water carbonated beverage, you can kind of deal with because it'll settle down really quickly, and whatever the CO2 loss that you've lost, you just take that hit and you deal with it. But if you take that hit with an alcoholic beverage, you typically, it's all freaking over. It's like you've lost so much of the bubbles that it's, almost like, why try? Which is why most people, if they're doing carbonated cocktails on tap, unless they have a dedicated machine like this, first of all, remember, there's no particulate matter in there. There's no juices. There's no nothing. There's nothing in there other than the whiskey and the liquid. So it's very water. So it's very kind of, finely titrated. But most people who do it need to stick with kind of low carbonation drinks. But I'd like to try one of these things. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of whiskey and soda, but, I'm down to try. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Yeah. Here, we got to take a quick break.
All right. Right back with more cooking issues.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
And we're back. Is this the first time Korin's been the sponsor?
I think so, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Love Korin. Shout out to Salary-san running that thing. Korin, I am a customer at Korin. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't purchase knives anymore because I'm on a spending freeze on the knives. But as I've said on the show many times, I am a giant fan of traditional Japanese knives. You ever use those things? Does Mark like those things?
I don't know. Yeah, I think so.
Did you ever see him use them?
No.
What does he like to cut with at home?
I don't know.
He cuts with your knives? What do you have?
Crappy.
Like, how crappy? Like, what level of crap?
Like the ones that they give you in the Star Chef's bag.
So you just picked up a swag bag and that became your cooking knives? Yeah, Nastasia, hardcore enemy of quality. Like, super hardcore enemy of quality. You know what the thing is, I think, whatever. Do you keep it sharp anyway?
No.
So what do you mean?
You can't even cut through a tomato.
So what do you use? Nastasia's like, I use the back of the knife to cut through a tomato because it's sharper. God, you know what? Why do I even bother? Why do I bother? What about you, Dave? What do you slice with at home?
Honestly, I don't know the brand name.
Hey, well, thanks to Corin for sponsoring our radio show today.
If Corin would want to send me over a set, I'd be happy to use them and talk about them
on the air. Man,
I would be more than happy.
They're not. It's not a set. Look, when you go to Corin, it's like you have to go. So you should. You should go to Corin, right? Just the same way that you should go to J.B. Prince and check J.B. Prince out, because they're two, like, kind of gems of stores. You know, they're high-priced, right? But if you go there, it's just, it's cool. You know what I mean? Like, they're cool to go to. But when you go to Corin, it's more like going to, like, a pet adoption center and, like, picking, like, a puppy out. You know what I mean? You got to, like, pick out, like, what kind of knife you want. You know, first you got to make the decision, like, what's your maximum price range? You know what I mean? Like, what's the maximum you're going to do? Right? That's your first choice. Then you have to choose what style you want. There's two ways to go this. You choose style in terms of Japanese Western or traditional Japanese, and then like the shape of knife. And then you just go from there. But they have so many choices of each one that you just gotta mess it up. You always end up spending more. At Corin, you always end up spending more. And then they have, you know, the master knife sharpener.
Should that be their slogan?
You always end up spending more? Yeah. Look, man. Like the next time that the yen takes a nosedive, right? Like, you know, the next time that whenever the dollar is doing really well against the yen, that's the time to go shop at Corin, because the knives are from Japan, and so you have to deal with like whatever the economy in Japan is doing at the time. So I remember I bought a set of I bought a really nice Deba and a nice Yanagi, and then the year after that there was a big swing in the dollar. This was years and years ago. And the knives like went up 50% in 1 year just based on the exchange rate, because I bought it before.
You won.
Finally, I win. yeah, finally. Hey, speaking of this, I'm not involved with this stuff, but I'm at this place called New Lab, which is, you know, where I'm doing prototyping for the next Booker & Dax piece of equipment. Which, honestly, Nastassi, when are we going to announce that? You think?
I hope spring.
What?
Announce that when it should be coming, right?
You're talking about,
yeah, like May, like, hey,
what
anticipate
is it?
This coming
anticipate,
yeah,
okay. I'm what gonna say look, we're gonna try to get our next product on sale by fourth quarter of this year, but anyway,
but when do you want to say what it is? I'm saying May.
What is it?
We can't say.
Can't tell you what it is. This is the first time we're taking on a market where someone else could just do it. We're not as... I have to figure out what kind of patent protection we have first on what's going on.
Oh, also, if you want to hear Dave talk next Tuesday at Tesla.
Or you could just listen to the 8 million episodes.
No, live. Have cocktails and... Yeah.
Jack Schramm is making the cocktails. All right.
At Tesla on 14th Street.
Do you know, Dave, that Nastassia is almost the owner of a Tesla?
Yeah.
Yeah, you were talking about this last week.
Yeah. All right. So,
you want to take a phone call?
Yeah, sure. Call her. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi.
Hey, how's it going? I had a question about... fermented orange drink that you've mentioned a number of times in the past. I saw it on your Instagram.
Sure.
I was curious if you could give us a procedure to make that drink.
Sure. So I would clarify the orange juice.
Yep.
And then, do it however you want. I recommend you use a Spinzol.
Don't worry, I have one.
Nice. And then, try to get it as clear as you can, right? So let it sit for a while before you spin it, so that you get like the most kind of solids out of it. Because anything that's left over is going to be a nightmare when it once it carbonates up. And then you have to this is where the choice comes in. Now you have to choose what ABV you're going to want to have with it. So you. I think I took it up, I forget what bricks I took it to. I think I took it to like 14 bricks. I have to remember, you just go online and you look up, bricks to potential ABV. And when you're doing this, you're going to ferment it basically dry. So you can just, I forget also the standard bricks of OJ. It's somewhere like 11, right? So you add just enough sugar to it to take it up to the bricks. So your alcohol level at the end, I think I shot for like 8% alcohol, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
And then I used just like, you know, cheap old Red Star champagne yeast and pitched it and, you know, put an airlock in it and fermented it dry. I was doing like small, I think like a gallon batch or something. I forget what size carboys I was doing it in, little ones though. And as soon as it stops bubbling, you can pull it, then you can bottle it and you can krausen it with sugar, which I've done, or you can force carbonate, up to you. It generally, I think, tastes best fairly soon. It's not something you want to lay down, so it's not like apple cider where, you know, it's just going to get better and better. So I would say after it finishes fermenting, you just give it like, like a week or, you know, a couple of days rest to, you know, mellow out and finish whatever it's going to do, unless you're going to krausen it and add, you know, you're not going to force carbonate, you're going to krausen it, in which case, you know, you got to wait for the CO2 to build up inside of it. But yeah, it's super easy. And the nice thing about it is that as the sugar goes away, the orange profile and the little bit of bitterness that's left really comes up. And so it goes back to being something kind of more complicated. But when there's all that sugar in there, it's like it's relatively simple as a beverage. And, you know, it's kind of useless. And then once it ferments dry and is bubbly, it's quite, you know, I like it. Give it a try. Let me know what you think. I like it.
That's awesome. Yeah, you've mentioned it a few times, and I've been wanting to try it. So, cool. Thanks for that.
All right, cool. Let us know how it works. And by the way, Dave, I'm gonna take the comment from that entire generation earlier in the show in good fun, as I hope they also took the king cake comment, right, Nastasia?
I hope you don't talk about it ever again.
You're the one that brought it up. I wasn't gonna say anything. Nastasia, how can you sit and lie? You say, sit, talk about the cake. Talk about the cake.
Oh yeah, no.
All right. So forget about it.
Don't talk about the chat room thing.
Let's never speak of it again.
So here's an interesting little bit of food news. Did you see that, you know, blockchains, bitcoins, which is why I was talking about Newlab? Because like half the people there, they're, you know, everyone's blockchain now. It's the thing, like, you know, it's money making. You know what blockchains are, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see that they're applying it to food?
No.
Yeah, so that, like, because it's not so much of a problem here in the U.S., but, you know, in other countries, food counterfeiting is a huge, huge deal, right? And so, you know, they have these, now they're using blockchain technology to identify food so that you can go check the authenticity of your food and it can't be faked.
Cool.
Nastasia's like, I don't care. I don't ever have a fake food problem because I live in New York City and spend my money on only good foods.
Not true.
Oh, come on. Your own pasta flyer. How's that going?
Good.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of... I'm supposed to go into Nastasia's place, by the way.
Oh, yes. When you do that, this is going to be so much fun.
Nastasia Lopez sets up a restaurant. Dave, you'll enjoy this.
All right, we got to get going then.
She puts the trash can like...
That was not me.
Like 5 feet tall.
That was not me.
You have to be freaking a basketball player to throw food away at her place.
It's so stupid because whoever designed this, like we have a handicap lift. Like that's the entire restaurant is based around this lift. Yet the food, the trash receptacle,
and everyone knows who your partners are, right?
No.
Anyway, she's got someone with money behind her. Yeah, you know what? She said, Dave, come in and saw the trash thing down. Come in with your hand jigsaw and saw the trash thing down. Crazy person. Oh,
when are you doing that?
I have gas back at my place. I was going to go into the whole story about gas, but I'll have to do it next. What'd you say?
Gas.
So I finally got gas back yesterday, but Dave's going to pull me off the air, so we'll talk about it. Actually, I won't be here next week. I'll be flying back next week.
Oh, right.
So in 2 weeks' time, send in your questions, and I'll talk about the travails of gas and what I've learned about the lies that plumbers tell you, what I've learned about gas regulators, what I've learned about gas supplies and Orify.
Fun show.
What?
Sounds like a fun show.
You know what, Nastasia? People who actually, you know, are interested in cooking, I think they want to know how their equipment works and how they can make it better. I was also going to describe, by the way, what you should never do from a safety standpoint. I was going to describe my history of manipulating gas-fired cooking devices and different ways of doing it, like solenoid versus bypass.
Oh, I think I'm gone that week.
Oh, you're such a jagwad, such a jagwuff. Anyway, all right, cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food Radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.